Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Now it is time for the last word with Lawrence O'Donnell. Good evening, Lawrence.
Good evening, Alex. And I learned about the latest turn in the Herschel Walker story by listening to you report it just a few minutes ago.
And what a turn.
Yes. I mean, there was that information. I'm just thinking of the number of times on video I have seen men on Fox ask Herschel Walker if he knows who the accuser is, and him saying, I have no idea, and those men on Fox accepting it instantaneously and fully.
At face value. And it turns out, Lawrence, that the woman who had the abortion was the mother of one of his children. It is a damning piece of information.
Yeah, we're going to get
counters the apparent lies that Herschel Walker has been spouting on conservative.
We're going to get to some of it later in this hour. Senator Elizabeth Warren is joining us. This was not something we planned to talk about it, but it is central to the abortion issue in the Senate campaigns. And one of the Senate campaigners, Tim Ryan in Ohio, will also be joining us later in the hour.
It's a great show, Lawrence.
Thank you,
Alex.
See you later. Thank you. Well, it was another very good day for the United States of America in the appropriately titled case of Donald J. Trump versus United States of America. The Justice Department asked the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals to expedite their appeal of the case. And in a one-page order, the appeals court said, motion to expedite appeal is granted. A three-judge panel of the appeals court has already issued a temporary order while the full appeal is pending, in which they completely agree with every word the Justice Department has said about the need to exclude the classified documents seized by the FBI at Donald Trump's winter home from examination by the special master in the case, who was appointed by federal district judge Aileen Mercedes Cannon, who is the only judge involved in this case who has agreed with the Trump lawyers about anything. Appeals like this usually take several months or more just for all of the briefs to be filed in the case before the appeals court actually then schedules a hearing, and then often several weeks after that or months finally before they issue a decision in such a case. But the 11th Circuit gave the lawyers in this case a deadline of 5 weeks from now for submitting all of the written briefs from both sides, quote, with no extensions allowed. This is an indication that the appeals court is very confident that the issues in this case can be decided quickly, as they were in the preliminary decision issued by the three-judge panel exactly one day after the final brief in that appeal was filed in the appeals court. That 29-page decision, written in less than 24 hours, agreed with everything that federal prosecutors said in their appeal, and not one word of what Donald Trump's lawyers said about the case. In a separate action in the case yesterday, Donald Trump's lawyers appealed the 11th Circuit's preliminary ruling against them directly to the United States Supreme Court. The Supreme Court then gave the Justice Department 1 week to file a written response to the Trump appeal. Harvard Law Professor Lawrence Tribe, who is a federal appeals expert who has argued and won several cases in the United States Supreme Court, will join our discussion tonight to detangle the two appeals routes that have now opened up in the case, and also to consider Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's debut this week on the bench in the Supreme Court of the United States. We have learned more about what the FBI found in their search of Donald Trump's home when a sealed document filed in the case by the Justice Department was apparently temporarily available by mistake in the court docket before it was then resealed. The sealed filing was entered in the case by the Justice Department on August 30th before Judge Cannon was involved in the case. The document explains to the court the procedures that the FBI used during the search to protect any documents that could be subject to attorney-client privilege. The filing says, during the search, the privilege review team agents took a broad view of potentially privileged information to include any documents to, from, or even referencing an attorney, regardless of whether the document appeared to capture communications to or from an attorney for the purposes of seeking legal advice, and regardless of who the attorney represented. Attachments to the filing includes a list of possibly privileged documents with descriptions like substitution of counsel in E. Jean Carroll versus Trump from Manila folder marked legal. The list also includes references to pardons, such as internal pardon package for IR and JC, internal pardon package for MB, Rod Blagojevich commutation internal analysis. The Justice Department filing noted many of these materials do not appear to be privileged. The criminal trial is underway in Washington in the seditious conspiracy case against Elmer Stewart Rhodes and four other defendants who call themselves Oath Keepers. They are charged in a seditious conspiracy to attack Congress on January 6th when the Electoral College votes were being counted. The prosecution is introducing evidence in the case in which Rhodes said, after Donald Trump lost the election, quote, we've got to be in D.C. You've got to make sure that Trump knows that you are willing to die to fight for this country. Leading off our discussion tonight are two former federal prosecutors, Paul Butler and Glenn Kirshner. Paul Butler is also a law professor at Georgetown University and an MSNBC legal analyst. Also joining us, Bradley Moss, a national security attorney. Glenn Kirshner, let me begin with you, and I want to come to you a little later in our discussion about what's been happening in that Oath Keeper trial, because you've been in the courtroom. But your reading of where we are with this granting of an expedited appeal by the 11th Circuit.
You know, so there's good news and bad news, Lawrence. The good news is it looks like the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals is distinguishing itself to being up to the task. They are meeting the urgency of the moment, and it looks like they are right on when it comes to the substance. You know, a unanimous three-judge panel, two judges having been appointed by Donald Trump, are basically smacking down every argument Trump tries to make. And importantly, they're not playing his game. His game is always to delay and run out the clock. That's the good news. The 11th Circuit seems to be up to the task. The bad news is Justice Clarence Thomas is the one who has supervisory responsibility over the 11th Circuit. And to put it generously, I think he is a wild card in the calculation.
He has given the Justice Department a week to respond, so we know there's nothing's going to happen for the next week. Paul Butler, what is your reading of where the case stands with the 11th Circuit at this point?
So, Lawrence, the issue is whether prosecutors can right now use these 11,000 documents that they got from the Mar-a-Lago search warrant. And Judge Cannon says they have to wait until the special master is done. But now the department is appealing because they say these documents shed light on where sensitive materials were stored at Mar-a-Lago and who might have had access to them. So it's the same old story that Trump has all of these documents that are vital to national security and that are important to a criminal case against him. And he, as Glenn said, is just doing everything he can to slow walk the investigation and prosecution.
And Bradley Moss, but because the Justice Department was successful in the first round of this appeal, the investigation is now allowed to proceed unencumbered, isn't it?
Only with respect to those documents that had the classification markings. And as Paul noted, those other thousands of records do have some relevance here. if there is ultimately going to be an indictment, it will likely be not just in the fact that there were the documents with the classification markings, but how they were intermixed and intertwined with these other records and where they were located. So while, yes, they are continuing on that classification side, they need access to those other documents. They need to be able to question people about how those other documents got there to make a decision on a full and encompassing potential prosecution decision.
And Glenn Kirshner, as a former prosecutor, where would this investigation be going right now? Would they have witnesses in a grand jury where they're actually putting documents in front of them and asking them about what they know about those documents?
Oh, absolutely. And they would also be submitting documents for a forensic analysis, for example, because one of the ways you can tell who might have possessed documents is to fingerprint them. Paper retains fingerprints, and we can lift latent fingerprints off of documents. We can also test documents for DNA, because when you touch them, you actually leave your epithelial cells, your skin cells, on those documents. So they would, you know, the Department of Justice would be dug into this investigation, not just with witnesses, but with forensic testing and analysis. And Judge Cannon really sort of threw a monkey wrench into that by these orders that seem designed to cater to Trump and slow things down. But hopefully the 11th Circuit will keep things moving forward.
And Paul Butler, with the reporting in The Washington Post this week about indicating that Donald Trump packed the boxes himself that were sent to Florida and was involved in that packing himself. And then, even more importantly, personally packed the boxes that were first sent back to the National Archives, where he then was trying to suggest that that was everything he had, even though we now know he had some documents right in his desk drawer. That new information is pursuable and may already be known by the FBI and the investigators, because those are conversations you can have with witnesses that have nothing to do with what's actually in the documents. It's, did you see Donald Trump, you know, putting papers in a box?
That's exactly right. And we literally have Donald Trump's hands all over evidence. So one issue is always going to be his intent. And on that level, we learned also that this week, that he directed a lawyer to lie, to say that all of the documents have been handed over to the National Archive, and that just wasn't true. And that's a problem, including for the lawyer. If the lawyer affirmed something that he knew wasn't true, the lawyer could get locked up. He could lose his license. But if that lawyer says he actually thought all the documents have been handed over, is it because he believed Donald Trump? Any lawyer should know better than that.
Yeah, and Bradley Boss, part of what we're reading in the Washington Post reporting and elsewhere is that there is so much to this investigation that can be accomplished now that does not require specific reference to specific documents.
Yeah, absolutely. You would hope and expect, and, you know, as both Paul and Glenn had mentioned, that the FBI was already investigating not only with the witnesses, but with the forensics to track down where things were put, by whom, and particularly to what extent Donald Trump was personally involved in it. And you had some new reporting tonight coming out from Jason Leopold that Trump's designee in 2021 had confirmed that everything being shipped off to Mar-a-Lago was government property. Mm-hmm. They already conceded this point, whether or not Trump realized it or not. They already put that into writing. And so that, again, ties their hands and shows how much that, as much as Trump wants to keep playing this charade with Judge Cannon and the 11th Circuit of maybe these are personal records, no, he's already lost this game. He's just trying to drag it out, like Glenn noted. And eventually, that, you know, the circus is going to come to an end here.
Glenn Kirshner, you've been in the courtroom during this seditious conspiracy trial. This is the most important January 6th trial yet. What can you tell us about how it has begun?
You know, thus far, the prosecution has had a series of good days. Now, mind you, they're early in their case in chief. The lead FBI agent, Special Agent Michael Pallian, has just about completed his testimony. So there's a lot of trial yet to come. But even during opening statements, there were some really good moments for the prosecution, and perhaps ironically, some of them came during the defense opening, because I really enjoyed when Elmer Stewart Rhodes' attorney got up and said, you know, If any of the Oath Keepers went into the Capitol that day, and we know they did, they were, quote, off mission. And then he added, you know, if Mr. Rhodes had gone into the Capitol, well, we might be looking at a whole different problem for him. What did he do? The leader of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, threw his fellow Oath Keepers under the bus by saying they were off mission, but I never went into the Capitol. So that was a really good moment for the prosecution, but it came during the defense opening statement. People should know every co-conspirator is responsible for the crime of every other co-conspirator once you've entered in to the criminal agreement, whether you actively participated in the crime, whether you were present at the crime or not. So, you know, this is, it's really a strong case thus far, but we have a lot of trial left to come.
If you were the mastermind of the bank robbery who had all the plans, architectural plans of the bank, but you didn't go in the bank, you're still guilty. Glenn Kirshner, Paul Butler, Bradley Boss, thank you all very much for starting off our discussion tonight. Really appreciate it. And coming up, Harvard Law Professor Lawrence Tribe will join us next to consider the debut of Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson this week on the Supreme Court bench and to give us his expert view of the appeals process in the case of Donald J. Trump versus the United States of America. Professor Tribe is next.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
The newest member of the Supreme Court taught the court a history lesson yesterday.
The framers themselves adopted the Equal Protection Clause, the 14th Amendment, the 15th Amendment in a race-conscious way, that they were, in fact, trying to ensure that people who had been discriminated against, the freedmen, during the Reconstruction period, were actually brought equal to everyone else in the society. The legislator who introduced that amendment said that, quote, unless the Constitution should restrain them, those states will all, I fear, keep up this discrimination and crush to death the hated freedmen.
Joining us now is Professor Lawrence Tribe, who has taught constitutional law at Harvard Law School for 5 decades. Professor Tribe, before we get your reaction to Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's debut on the Supreme Court, can we ask you to detangle the threads for us in the now two tracks of appeals in the case of Donald J. Trump versus United States of America, with Donald Trump appealing directly to the United States Supreme Court, while the Justice Department has an expedited appeal now moving in the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals?
Well, I couldn't blame people for being a bit confused. So just to go back to the origin of all of this, it was a search and seizure that was pursuant to a search warrant that was issued by Judge Reinhart, and not a word in anything that has been filed in court by the Trump lawyers suggests anything illegal about that search and seizure, or that any of the things that were searched and seized can't be used. So all the rest is sort of dancing around the edges and counting angels on the head of a pin. The Trump lawyers did manage to get this Judge Cannon, who's from left field, to basically toss a hand grenade into the proceedings by issuing an order in early September saying that there would be a special master and he would go over all these documents. And in the meantime, the documents that were seized could be used only to protect national security, but not to conduct a criminal investigation. That made no sense, and the 11th Circuit made fast work of it in an opinion that basically said, without actually ordering her to get off the case, basically said that she has no business being there. That decision is being challenged only in limited part in the U.S. Supreme Court in a filing that was made on the eve of Yom Kippur last night. The only thing that the president now is trying to say is that even though it's, you know, he's not asking the Supreme Court to undo the decision of the 11th Circuit, that the criminal investigation can go on. That's what he really wanted to stop. He's simply asking them to undo the part of their order that said the classified documents shouldn't be reviewed for claims of privilege by the special master, Judge Deary. But Judge Deary has already said he doesn't even need to see them because based on everything in his court, he knows that those documents belong to the government. They're not privileged. They are not protected. So that's just a sideshow. The real dispute is the dispute in the 11th Circuit, which, as you pointed out, the 11th Circuit decided to hear on an extraordinarily expedited basis. It turned down the attempt by Donald Trump to slow things down. And in that court, the Department of Justice is appealing the entire intervention by Judge Cannon, saying she had no jurisdiction, no business interfering, no business appointing a special master. And the arguments for that are pretty close to slam dunk. So it really looks like, just as we've already seen, even judges appointed by Trump don't buy his crazy arguments. It looks like this is a tempest in a teapot. And it looks like once the special master is removed from the case, which I think is going to happen sooner rather than later, they'll be ready to indict Donald Trump for obstruction of justice and for mishandling and, in fact, stealing highly classified documents and then keeping them in an insecure place in violation of, among other things, the Espionage Act. So seeing all of that coming down, he does what he usually does, and that is try to sort of kick up some dust and throw some sand in the gears. But in the end, these gears are moving forward, whether he likes it or not.
Should people be concerned that Justice Clarence Thomas is the point person for the Supreme Court on this filing that Donald Trump made directly to the Supreme Court?
Well, as it happens, he is the circuit justice for the 11th Circuit. But whatever else you may think of him, he simply doesn't have the power as a solo justice to interfere with this criminal investigation. If he is inclined, I mean, so far he's insisting that the briefing go quickly and in setting a deadline of next Tuesday at 5 p.m. for the response brief, he's acting in a perfectly judicious way. Before he actually did anything to favor Donald Trump, he would surely have to go to the full court. And I see no reason to think that the court is going to do Trump any special favors here. His arguments are just empty.
And that full court now includes Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. What was your impression of her debut on the bench this week?
Well, I was frankly really thrilled. I wasn't surprised because I've known her for years and thought she was really brilliant and articulate and historically sophisticated. But she used the opportunity of the oral argument to conduct what is really a masterclass in the original meaning of the 14th Amendment. You could just see her addressing the conservatives on the court. You want originalism? She read them the original history. The 14th Amendment was not passed in order to make the Constitution colorblind, but to provide a basis for legislative action that would take race into account in order to undo the lingering effects of slavery and racism. The people who wrote it, she explained to both her colleagues and to the nation who was listening, the people who wrote it, she read from the reports, the people who wrote it were in favor of a Freedmen's Bureau that applied not only to former slaves, but to African Americans to give them an equal opportunity. Rather than just going around the edges the way some of the justices did, and even the U.S. Solicitor General. She went to the absolute heart of the case. And the way these oral arguments are conducted in the modern court, the justices are really talking not so much to the lawyers, but to one another. She staked out her position, made it very powerful, and is going to make it much harder for the court to do what I think it is unfortunately predetermined to do, and that is to still cut down even further the effective use of the Voting Rights Act to undo racial gerrymandering without even giving the minorities a full equal chance to be represented. But she is making a record for history and basically teaching the country in the process, making it much harder for the court to pursue its agenda of dismantling the process of desegregating America.
Professor Lawrence Tribe, thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us again tonight. Always appreciate it.
Thanks, Lawrence.
Thank you. And next, we turn to former Harvard Law professor, Senator Elizabeth Warren, will join us next.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
I don't understand the connection between opinions that people disagree with and the legitimacy of the court.
How about the connection between conflict of interest and the legitimacy of the court? Every federal judge must comply with the Judicial Code of Ethics, except the 9 members of the most important court in the land, the United States Supreme Court. And so, Chief Justice John Roberts has not said a word about the most glaring public conflict of interest the United States Supreme Court has ever had in its entire history. And that is Justice Clarence Thomas ruling on a case that could involve his wife. When Clarence Thomas was the only member of the Supreme Court to disagree with the court's decision that the Trump White House communications had to be handed over to the January 6th committee, we did not yet know that those communications could include text messages from Clarence Thomas's wife to then White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. Since that decision, we have discovered that Virginia Thomas was texting the White House urging on any attempts to overthrow the presidential election long after there were any legal options left for contesting that election. And early in the process, Virginia Thomas texted Mark Meadows saying, "The Biden crime family and ballot fraud co-conspirators are being arrested and detained for ballot fraud right now and over coming days, and will be living in barges off Gitmo to face military tribunals for sedition." Mrs. Thomas is a lawyer, and she actually wrote those things. Since those texts have become public, Chief Justice John Roberts has not said one word about the obvious conflict of interest that Clarence Thomas has in any case involving Donald Trump. In fact, Chief Justice John Roberts has never said a word about how to deal with conflict of interest at the United States Supreme Court. Our next guest has a plan for that. Joining us now is Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts. She's a member of the Senate Finance Committee, the Senate Banking Committee, and is a co-sponsor of the Judicial Ethics and Anti-Corruption Act. Thank you very much for joining us tonight, Senator Warren. What would you say to the Chief Justice about the connection between legitimacy of the court and conflict of interest?
That the court's legitimacy is derived from the belief of the people of the United States that this court will make decisions based on the rule of law and not on personal entanglements. That's why we have judicial ethics. And that's why it is that conflicts of interest and even the appearance of impropriety causes a judge to recuse himself or herself from any decision. Look, I want to pass the judicial ethics law, but to do that, we've got an election coming up. And that means we've got to have a majority in the House. We've got to have a majority big enough in the Senate to roll back the filibuster to make the changes we need to make. So every time you feel frustrated about what's happening in the Supreme Court, every time you want to shake your fist, every time over the next 34 days that you want to throw things at the television or tear up whatever your news feed is, stop and say, what can I do to influence the outcome of the election in November? Because what happens in that election in November is going to profoundly affect not just what happens in the Supreme Court, but how much power the Supreme Court has to determine our lives in so many other ways.
And you need more Democratic senators than just the 50 you have in the Supreme Court now. Yes. You're going to be followed on this program by Tim Ryan, who in the latest poll is running 3 points ahead of his Republican opponent, J.D. Vance, in Ohio. In Georgia tonight, we have a Senate race that has been hit with something we've never seen before. And I wasn't planning to ask you about this, but it's been breaking news of the night that the Republican candidate Herschel Walker has been denying that he knows who the woman is who emerged this week saying that he paid for her abortion. She has revealed tonight that she is actually the mother of one of his children. And Herschel Walker has not yet responded to that. But what we're seeing here is a Republican candidate who is involved in a story like this while at the very same time saying that all abortions in Georgia and America, all of them should be banned.
So think of it this way again. This is about who the two candidates are in Georgia. This is about what the two parties are right now all across this country. Republicans have made clear that if they can get enough power, they will ban abortions all across this country. Democrats have made clear that government should not be making these decisions, and that if we can get two more senators in the United States Senate and hold on to the House, we can make Roe versus Wade the law of the land. It's really that simple. If you think the government ought to be making the decisions, then the Republicans, they're offering that option. But if you actually think that this ought to be a decision made by a woman and her doctor and no one else, that the woman should have the right to decide who she wants in that room with her to make that decision, then that means you got to be out there fighting hard to get the Democrats elected.
What would you say to people who, as John Roberts is acknowledging there, have questioned the legitimacy of the Supreme Court because they reversed this 50-year right that women in this country have?
Yeah. Well, you know, the Supreme Court has done this to itself. These justices are not mainstream. Remember how this happened. One by one, as the Republicans put them forward, with that wink, wink, nod, nod. We know what they're going to do. On Roe, we know what they're going to do for corporate America. We know what they're going to do to try to destroy unions. We know what they're going to do on voting rights. But no, each of those nominees stood up and said, yep, what is settled law is settled law, and we will not disturb settled law. And remember, Most of them said right off the top, Roe versus Wade settled law. And as soon as they had the votes, they flipped around on that. And they said to every person in this country, those constitutional rights that you have depended on, whether it's about abortion, whether it's about voting rights, whether it's about equal marriage, you better not count on them anymore, because this extremist Supreme Court says their opinion is what matters and they can make the decisions for the rest of the nation. And this is why I say, but that's what this election in 34 days is all about. And this is why we want to help in Georgia. We want to help in Ohio. We also want to help in Pennsylvania, johnfetterman.com. We want to help in Wisconsin, mandelabarnes.com. When people feel frustrated, then go to John Fetterman, go to Mandela Barnes, send them $25, offer to volunteer an hour to help out and make phone calls. You know, I feel hopeful in this moment because we can still affect the outcome. Hopeful, but urgent about how much we've got to do in the next 34 days. We have an opportunity, if we can get two more Democratic senators, hang on to what we've got and get two more and hold on to the House, we can roll back the filibuster. We can make Roe the law of the land. We can protect voting rights all across this country. We can protect union rights across this country. We can turn back a Supreme Court that is determined to impose its extremist views on the rest of us. We can do it, but only if we get engaged in these races that are coming up in November, only if we put ourselves on the line for John Fetterman, put ourselves on the line for Mandela Barnes, put ourselves on the line for Tim Ryan and for Raphael Warnock and for Maggie Hassan. We've really got to be in these fights.
Senator Elizabeth Warren, you have queued it up for Tim Ryan perfectly. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it. We always appreciate it.
Good to see you.
Thank you. Coming up, Congressman Tim Ryan is trying to take a Senate seat away from Republicans in Ohio, and he's now running 3 points ahead in the latest poll. Congressman Tim Ryan will join us next. In the all-important campaign for control of the United States Senate that Elizabeth Warren was just talking about, Democrats have some good news. In the latest poll of the Ohio Senate race, our next guest, Congressman Tim Ryan, is polling 3 points ahead of Donald Trump's candidate, J.D. Vance. Donald Trump won Ohio in the last election by 8 points, which means Tim Ryan has to convert some Republican voters to win.
In the last two Congresses, I've been ranked in the top 10% of most bipartisan members of Congress. That's the reality, and J.D.'s an extremist, you know? I mean, he's in the extreme wing of the extremists, and that's frustrating.
Joining us now is Democratic Congressman Tim Ryan of Ohio. He's the candidate for U.S. Senate there. Congressman Ryan, thank you very much for joining us tonight. I hope you just heard what Elizabeth Warren was saying about the importance of all the Senate campaigns, and in particular yours. It's a statistical tie there. You're running 3 points ahead in the latest poll. There were recent polls showing, you know, Vance 1 point ahead of you. It's all very tight there. What are you expecting, and what is your campaign plan in these closing weeks?
Well, people are recognizing, Lawrence, and thanks for having me. People are recognizing that J.D. Vance is an absolute extremist. He wants a national abortion ban. He's called rape inconvenient. He's told women who are in violent marriages that they should stay in those marriages for the sake of family values. I mean, this is somebody who is so extreme and doesn't connect with Ohioans. And what's going to happen in the next 4.5 weeks, we are on the ground. We've hit all 88 counties in this state. We're going to rural areas, working hard in red counties, and we're getting a tremendous response. We've got a lot of two-time Trump voters that are coming our way. We've got a lot of Republicans coming our way. Rob Portman's former chief of staff, a statewide official, Jim Petro, Republican, all on board with a big contingent of Republicans saying we got to go with Tim Ryan. I mean, this is the moderate wing of the old Republicans that you remember. That's who's here in Ohio, and they're on board with us, which is why you're seeing those poll numbers and why is why we're going to close this thing out. And we're going to win this seat and shock the world with this race.
What are you telling Ohio voters about what the Biden administration and the Democratic Congress, Democratic Senate has delivered for Ohio?
Well, you're feeling a lot of what I've been advocating for my entire career on the ground here. The infrastructure bill is going to create 600,000 jobs here in Ohio. It's going to make sure we get broadband, clean water, new bridges, that Brent Spence Bridge in Cincinnati. You know, we're going to get these things funded. And J.D. was against this, even though Rob Portman, the moderate Republican senator in Ohio, helped put all this together. The CHIPS Act landed the Intel project, going to be $100 billion investment by Intel and other companies. Average wage there, $135,000 a year. We're building electric trucks, electric cars, electric tractors, battery plants, solar panels. The announcements right after the Inflation Reduction Act have been unbelievable. And that's the next generation of manufacturing that we're doing right here in Ohio. And people are going to vote their future, not the past. And that's where JD is. So we're pumped about it. I think people are really excited and they want someone who's going to fight for them in the United States Senate. And they know that's Tim Ryan.
What is your reaction when you see your opponent, JD Vance, get publicly humiliated by the guy who chose him to run, Donald Trump? And Donald Trump says to Ohio voters that J.D. Vance kisses my, you know, says that publicly about the candidate that he picked to run in Ohio. And J.D. Vance just takes it. I've never seen anything like that in a Senate candidate before.
I thought Ted Cruz was the biggest, you know what, kisser in politics, but it's clearly J.D. Vance. I don't know anybody I grew up with, Lawrence, you know, in Ohio, that would be that humiliated in front of the entire world, be called an ass kisser, and then 10 minutes later, get back up on the stage and grip and grin with the guy who just humiliated you. Like, that's not how Ohioans are built. We want an ass kicker from Ohio, and that's what I'm going to do. And look, we're building a grassroots effort because people can smell the phoniness from this guy. We've got 350,000 low dollar donors. We got this guy on the run. He won't even be seen in Ohio. He's afraid to meet with people in Ohio, one, because he's kind of lazy, but also he knows he's so extreme that he can't connect with Ohio voters. So we're going all over the state. He's not anywhere. He's even afraid of like some of the people who voted for Trump because he was so against Trump. Like, this guy's all over the board. We are asking people to help us win this race. This race just got called, moved from lean Republican to toss up. We're asking people to help us the last 4 weeks. Go to timforoh.com. We are going to surprise the world here in Ohio. And it's going to be a great thing for the Democratic Party when Tim Ryan and Sherrod Brown are shoulder to shoulder on behalf of working class people from the great state of Ohio. It's going to be an exciting time. And I think a whole new version of the Democratic Party is going to come to fruition because of what we're doing here in Ohio.
How does Sherrod Brown win statewide in Ohio, a state that Donald Trump wins by 8 points? And what can you learn from the Sherrod Brown paths to statewide victory?
Well, I learned from Sherrod very early on when I was a young member of Congress and he was in Congress. This state and the economic issues have to be the focus, right? It's the trade agreements. It's making sure we have fair trade, not just free trade. It's making sure that corporations can't just get away with offshoring jobs. It's not just about tax cuts for the top 1%. It's about tax cuts for working people and small businesses. And those bread and butter economic issues are the issues in Ohio. And Sherrod figured that out. I understand that in my bones because of where I grew up and how I grew up. It's the price of drugs. It's the prescription costs. It's insulin. It's the opiate epidemic. It's healthcare costs. It's better schools for our kids, robust joint vocational. It's about protecting unions and making sure that they have the right to organize and lift everybody up. Sherrod figured this out. And we're running a very similar campaign. I'm a different guy than Sherrod, but a very similar campaign. And when you run an economic campaign, you know, even like Obama did against Mitt Romney, right? If you run an economic campaign in Ohio, you win Ohio. And that's why we're going to win. JD's running around with Marjorie Taylor Greene and the extremists, and Lindsey Graham, and calling for a national ban on abortion. And I'm talking about jobs, wages, pensions, and health care, and making sure that our kids have a good future. We're actually building things in Ohio again. That's such a distinct difference. And that's why you're seeing the poll numbers that you're seeing. And that's why ultimately we're going to win this race.
Tim Ryan, 3 points ahead in Ohio. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We always appreciate it.
Thanks, Lawrence. Appreciate it.
Thank you. We'll be right back. I won't be here tomorrow night. My friend Ali Velci will be here in my place. I will be celebrating the birth of Saturday Night Live legend Jim Downey, one of the show's longest serving writers, who appeared on this show some years ago with his friend Bill Murray. I will be back here on Friday night at 10 p.m. for Friday's edition of The Last Word. So I'll see you here Friday at 10.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.